Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit Michter's.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. I'm the beverage director of the Epicurean Group of Restaurants, which includes Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, Lapicho, and Anfora. It's our little wine bar, and Epicurean Events, if you have any catering needs. I'm very excited today to be with the wine director of North End Grill, Mia Vandewater. She's joining us today in the studio. And before we get started, I did want to tell you guys about the best wine I had last week. I'm going to ask Mia to also share her favorite wine from the past week. It was a great week for wine drinking for me, especially because I had a friend of mine, Chiara Pepe, from the Emidio Pepe Winery in town. And I saw her several days and tried quite a few of her wines. One of my favorites was the Pecorino, which is new to the Emidio Pepe Winery. They planted the grapes about 10 years ago, and it is by far the greatest expression of that grape that I've ever had, at least. So the Emidio Pepe Pecorino, I want to say, was the best wine that I had last week, although some of their older Montepulciano's were pretty extraordinary, including the 2000 vintage. I have to say that was my favorite. Emidio said that 2001 is for men, 2000 is for women. I guess I side with the women on that one because that wine was extraordinary. Mia, what was the best wine you had this past week?
You know, on Monday night, one of the kids on my team had a big dinner party and made a whole bunch of handmade pasta, and it was awesome. And one of the things that we had there was a magnum of the 2012 Ariana Occhipinti SP68, which is, it's a little bit terminally one of my favorite wines, but it's mostly Frappato plus Nera d'Avola from Sicily, and it's just, it's so fresh and tart and quaffable and savory all at the same time. It's one of my favorite things.
Such a fun wine, and even more fun out of Magnum, I imagine.
It was pretty awesome.
That's awesome. So it's obviously getting warmer here in New York, and you guys have quite an extensive rosé program that I'd love to talk about. This weekend I enjoyed some Arnaud Roberts and Red Car Rosé, and those were also contenders, but not quite as good as the Emidio Pepe Pecorino. Tell us about what you guys have going on at the restaurant for rosé.
Sure. We're actually doing a company wine, like all USHG rosé celebration for the month of May. So all of the restaurants from North End Grill to Gramercy Tavern to the Modern all are featuring rosé lists that express that particular restaurant's unique take on rosé. You have sparkling at the Modern, you have hidden gems from around the world at Gramercy, and at North End Grill we're doing New California, which has actually been one of the best times I've ever had putting together a list, which I was surprised by how cool and how much fun it was to sort of put this collection of rosés together. So we have 14 rosés open this month. You can have it by the glass, you can have it by the bottle, you can have it by the half bottle, however you want. And in my humble opinion, it is possibly the 14 coolest up-and-coming rosé producers in California.
14 rosés you can have by the glass, by the half bottle. That is awesome. So what are some of your favorites from the list?
So some of my favorites, I really love the Tribute to Grace Grenache Rosé from Santa Barbara. She does 100% Grenache red wines as well, but this is the same grapes from the Highlands Vineyard just in rosé. It's so delicate and feminine and pretty. We have the Arnett Roberts that you had earlier this week, the Rosé of Trigo Nacional, which is this sort of super obscure Portuguese grape that's growing up in Lake County, which is just north of Napa Valley. But that's like spicy and lots of stone fruit and is really unique and has lots of citrus to it. And then I think the other thing that's been a lot of fun is the Edmund St. John Rosé of Gamay from the Sierra Foothills, the Bone Jolly. I feel like California Gamay is something that you don't really see in general, but they're making this like very fruity on the nose, really super clean and fresh on the palate expression.
All very, very cool wines. What do you think of this tiny little movement towards high quality, dry, white Zinfandel? Have you had these, like the Turley and Brock does it? There might be one or two other people too.
You know, I haven't. I thought about putting some Storybook Mountain White Zinfandel on the California Rosé list. But I decided that like Storybook is so old school and they were a little bit not in step. But I haven't. I've been meaning to try the Turley. I just haven't been in the same room with it.
And how have people been responding to seeing all these rosés? Are people drinking them?
Yeah. There's a lot of rosé happening at North End Grill right now.
That's really exciting. I also love drinking rosé this time of year. I think it's something that you can drink all year round. I don't understand why people drink necessarily white wine in the winter, but they won't drink rosé. But it is an exciting time of year because everyone's really releasing their rosés right now, and so you get to try them all at the same time.
It's like a festival or a celebration of rosé. And also, I just wanted to say the other thing that's been really fun about this this celebration of rosé that we're doing is there's a charitable component to it. Mm-hmm. All of across the board, we're supporting Bed-Stuy Campaign Against Hunger, which is, of course, a neighborhood in Brooklyn. A lot of people who work in the restaurant live down there, and essentially $1 from every glass of rosé sold, or $4 for the bottle, goes to Bed-Stuy Campaign Against Hunger to help them with their community outreach efforts. And they, I guess the statistic is last year they served 1.8 million meals over the course of the year to people in need in the neighborhood. And that for us is like really near and dear to our hearts, because the whole thing about working in a restaurant is it's such a community and it's such a family, and you come together over meals all the time. So we like that you can come in and drink an awesome glass of New California Rosé and also be helping to bring celebration and community to people who
are in need of it. And now, is this program across all of the restaurants, or is this just at North End?
This is across all of the restaurants.
Wow, that's it is fun enough to drink rosé on its own, but if it's going to a good cause, that's pretty awesome. And now let's talk about the grill part of North End Grill. Along with this being a great time of year for drinking some rosé, it's also a great time of year for grilling out in the yard. I finally, I'm a city kid. I grew up in the city. I never had a yard, but now that I live in Brooklyn as well, not too far from Bed-Stuy, actually, I have a little yard. I was grilling out this weekend. You guys have grilling as part of as a main part of the cuisine at North End Grill. Tell us first, how do you pair food with, or how do you pair wine with grilled foods? And then we could talk about some good like outdoor grilling kind of wines.
Sure. Yes, grilling is an integral part. It's probably actually the heart of the kitchen at North End Grill. And it's kind of cool because we've got two different grilling apparatuses, if you will. There's a wood fire grill that's open flame. There's big grates that raise and lower on top of it, so you can either get your meat much closer or much farther away from the fire. And then we also have these Spanish ovens that are called Josper ovens. It's essentially an enclosed charcoal grill. It's a little bit, it tends to burn at a hotter rate, so your cooking times are a little bit different. But for me, the thing is that the wood fire grill gives you the kind of characters that you would expect if you're, like, say, out camping and you've got an open fire and you're, like, doing hot dogs over the fire there, as opposed to the Josper oven is a little bit more like the grill, the Weber grill in your backyard and the charcoal and or out in Prospect Park or wherever you're grilling. So for me, one of the greatest things about the grills is they make so many pairing possibilities more accessible, because that like sort of smoke and char that you get from grilling something means that you can take a branzino and roast it over the wood fire grill, and it's accessible to red wine in a way that it wouldn't be if you were, say, like coating in salt and baking it or whatnot, because the char works with tannin, which is that stuff that like dries out your mouth and can be tricky with fish. The smoke will meet that, and your options become like
so you can
infinite.
Even go with a tannic red wine, because usually if you have
right.
I mean, if you do a light tannin, very soft red wine, it's pretty versatile with fish. But then once you start going to some drying tannin, it gives you this like weird metallic flavor. But you're saying that you can even get like a tannic red wine with fish. Would you ever do like a Nebbiolo with a grilled fish?
It has definitely been done. we've actually got right now, we have this red snapper. We do it in the Jasper oven. It comes with maitake mushrooms and a little bit of a brown butter. And that, I find, it works really well with a lot of Italian wines. Mm-hmm. And we've definitely done some Nebbiolo by the glass with that wine.
Wow, that's super interesting. You know, where I would go instinctually would be towards wines from volcanic soil. So maybe something like Etna Rosso or a white from Santorini. Mm-hmm. Do you find that kind of expression of smokiness goes well? Do you agree with me here?
I do. It's one of the reasons we've been pouring in a Certico by the glass for the past 2.5 years. Not the same one, but we right now have always had a Greek white on the list. But yeah, absolutely. I think wines with that little bit of smokiness tend to work really well. Something else that's super nerdy but a lot of fun if you ever come in contact with it is this grape called Zierfandler from Austria. It's from just south of Vienna. And the soils there aren't volcanic, but there's a lot of sulfur hot springs in the area. Like, it's a big vacation resort area.
In the Termin region.
In Termin region, exactly.
Yeah.
That gives a smokiness to the wine that's really cool with food from the grill.
Yeah, cool wines. I like the Stadelmann and the Alfart. I don't know if which one you guys have. But
we have the Stadelmann. It's great.
Delicious, delicious wines. And the Mandelho, which I guess is their top wine. For a while over at Gramercy, I guess they had purchased some, and then it just didn't move on the list. So you could find like some Mandelho Stadelmann. This is pretty geeky, but like with like 5-6 years of age on it, and it ages like extraordinarily beautifully. If there are any wine geeks like out there who care to do this, I would recommend cellaring your Stadelmann Zierfandler Mandelho, because that wine ages beautifully. It's like the searing, ripping acidity. All right, so I do want to give you a shout out and some props, because you're a total badass, and you and you recently passed. Not only did you pass the advanced sommelier exam, which is extremely difficult to pass, usually not even 50% of the people who take it pass it, but you are the very best score. You won the Rudd Scholarship. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow. That's super, super impressive. This is a challenging exam. What did you do? What was your studying like? What was your strategy here?
Well, a friend of mine, Morgan Harris, who is now up at Jean Georges, we talk about theory all the time because he's also an epic theory and wine nerd. And you just have to commit yourself to spending like 30 hours a week studying, which sounds really boring, but
30 hours a week.
For the first 6 months or so that I was studying, it was probably like 10 to 15. But for the last like 8 months or so, it was solidly 25 to 30 hours a week.
Whoa.
It's because it's literally everything. And I think that the important thing is to start from the ground up. So we all know that Burgundy is incredibly parcelated, and there's all of these different vineyards and tons of different producers, and it seems like this maze of things, but like why is it like that, and how did it start? And like, we have all these vineyards because the Cistercian monks in the 1300s like had nothing better to do with their time but pray and read and tend grapevines, so they got really obsessed with like the different aspects of the slopes and the soils And sort of it starts from the beginning and then it gets up into I know all of the monopoles of Domentola, Romani Conti or whatever it is.
Well, you have a quite a larger capacity for memory than I do. Extremely, extremely impressive. I know you said you're going to be sitting for the master hopefully next year.
There's an application process.
Okay.
And sometimes they make you wait a year before you can sit.
How could they make someone who got the best score wait a year? If any of you who are in charge of making these decisions actually listen to this show, don't make her wait a year. She got the best score in her exam. Come on. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more with Mia Vanderwater, the wine director from the Great North End Grill, here on In the Drink.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small, from careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels, to lower barrel entry proof before heat cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said, it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's, phenomenal. For more information, visit Michter's.com. Or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
All right. Obviously, we're big fans of Michter's bourbon here at In the Drink. But if we're drinking another kind of whiskey, Scotch in particular, you know, they have an incredible, you guys have an amazing Scotch program over at North End Grill. I can't think of a restaurant, you know, other than maybe like the Brandy Library, if that's a restaurant, that has quite an extensive Scotch program as you guys do. Tell us about some of your favorite Scotches and maybe something that's rare you can't find anywhere else.
Sure. We have indeed extensive Scotch list. It's, I think, something up over 125 single malts at present, and then there's some blended scotches as well. Something that I think is really, really cool about our list that you don't see other places is we have an extensive collection of independent bottlers within that list. And an independent bottler is basically an agency. Adelphi and Signatory and Gordon MacPhail are all independent bottlers, and they go around to the various distilleries and taste through like all of the barrels in a particular room, and they'll pick one that they think is like incredibly expressive or unusual or unique or just really like the best of the bunch, and they'll buy that particular cask from, say, Macallan, and they'll take it and they'll age it somewhere else and they'll bottle it separately. So we've got a huge Adelphi collection, which is really, really cool. One of my absolute favorites is we have a Colila 12-year Adelphi cask. Mm-hmm. That's really great. We also have, if you're looking for something like super extra manly, the Mortlock 16-year Adelphi cask will totally put hair on your chest, but it's pretty awesome. It's like 116 proof or something like that.
Wow.
It's super intense because they don't rectify them or cut them with water in the same way that you would just a standard single malt bottling.
And do you have a lot of scotches from distilleries that maybe no longer exist? I've always found that those are interesting. There's been a lot of consolidation in the Scotch world over the years, and if you can find an extinct, I think that might be the right word. But
we do. They call them ghost distilleries.
Ghost distilleries, yes.
But we do indeed. I think some of the ones that I really like are, we've got the 14-year and the 21-year from Rosebank, mm-hmm. which used to exist in the Lowlands and is no longer there. And then actually on Campbelltown, it's a little bit of an interesting story because Campbelltown used to have the highest concentration of distilleries in Scotland. And now there's 3 operating distilleries on Campbelltown. And almost everything is owned by Springbank, mm-hmm. but Springbank has sort of reopened a couple of the actual ghost distilleries and is producing other bottlings under different names. Like they do a bunch of different bottlings under Longrow, which is their like peated line of scotches. So those are really cool. There's like an ex-Cabernet cask or an ex-Burgundy cask bottling. So those are fun. They're unique and different.
Very cool. So just to change the subject a little bit, When you took over as wine director, the list was about 120, 150 selections. It was a very nice list. I remember drinking some really nice wines from the beginning. But you've really grown that list to something that makes North End Grill a wine destination with over 500 selections. Congratulations. That's a ton of work, and you've done an amazing job. So you have a lot of experience with growing a list, with stocking a professional cellar. What does your cellar at home look like? Do you have any tips for people out there who maybe want to cellar some wine, but don't have Danny Meyer money?
Sure. I think it's important when you're building a cellar for your home. I mean, I taste a lot of wine over the course of the week. And I, of course, buy it with the list at North End Grill in mind. But I think that over time, as you explore different types of wine, it's good to figure out what you like best and then sort of like concentrate on that. But there's a lot of wines out there, especially from lesser known regions. Like you can buy some really cool like Cabernet Merlot blends, if that's your thing, from the northeast of Italy, from like the Veneto. They do some really great stuff up there. And that's not going to cost you to buy in the same way that it would if you wanted to buy, you know, high dollar brand name recognition Napa or Bordeaux. And the wines will age because they're incredibly well made. Yeah. And so finding something like the Gemella from Vigna Alta, which is a Merlot Cabernet Franc blend from the Veneto, and buying like 6 bottles of it and drink one now and drink one in like 5 years. And if you have the space to pick up like 6 or 8 bottles of something or even a case, then you can start to see it evolve over time. And that's really cool. And again, just the exploring regions that don't have sort of like the marketing money behind them, if you will, I think you get a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah. And normally I wouldn't condone drinking Cabernet Merlot from Italy on this show. I'm a big fan of the indigenous grapes, but Northeastern Italy has had these grapes grown there for such a long time that they, you go to the Veneto or Friuli, they really consider them to be indigenous grapes to the area, and they're truly unique expressions. And I agree. Like, if you are a Cabernet drinker, it's best to go places. It's grown all over the world, but go somewhere that's not your initial like first thought of where to go, and you can find age-worthy wines at a really good. Really good price, so I like that. I like that suggestion. I do want to talk to you about, you were an actress for years.
It's true.
Is that over? Or are you now? I mean, you spend so much time with obviously work and studying. Have you put that behind you, or do you still act?
I like to say that I'm retired.
Okay. Is this like a Michael Jordan retirement where you can come, you might come back three times?
At present, I'm not planning on revisiting acting. If anyone is really active on Google, there's stuff up on the internet. Whoa. That you can still access if you'd like to. I'm not going to tell you about it. You have to go find it. But something that I really love about restaurants, and part of the reason that I'm not that motivated to go back into acting, is all of the things that I love best about the theater, and in particular, but film as well, is this sense of team and community, and the fact that you and a whole bunch of other people are all coming together to create something and to build an experience for people. And I think that It's just as satisfying to do that in the context of a restaurant floor and creating a dining experience for someone as it is to go into a theater and build some sort of emotional, cathartic fantasy. So I guess I would say that I'm retired from acting, but I still get to do the parts of it that I love best all the time.
And on your Twitter profile, it lists you as a strident feminist. And I want to know, as someone who is self-identified as a feminist, how do you feel the current state of the wine industry is for women? Do you think that we're in a good place? Do you think that there's still a lot of work to be done? What are your thoughts?
I think that while like the current demographic is certainly heavily weighted towards men, there's a lot more men in wine than there are women, just because traditionally it's been more of a masculine career path. I think that the momentum and the amount of women that are working in wine and I think that the amount of women who are working in wine is expanding in a really great way. And you know, I think that the culture of the community is also, generally speaking, really, really hospitable and not, like, chauvinistic or misogynistic at all. I think that, in general, we all just want to do what we do, and it doesn't matter who you are or how you're shaped or what. So I think that things are moving in a positive direction, and I would encourage... Well... I would encourage anyone who loves restaurant and loves wine to get into it, regardless.
Yeah, well, at least in our restaurants, it's mostly women who run our restaurants, and I think that's a very good thing. I did have some quick fire questions for you,
okay.
If you're ready for it.
Fire away.
Are you ready for it?
Okay. Ready.
What wine do you always like to have in your apartment? Available at all times.
Available at all times. Some sort of sparkling, like Cremant, French Cremant or Zect or something like that. And also, I love Syrah more than I love anything else in the world.
Sparkling Syrah?
Not sparkling Syrah.
Have you had one of those? I feel like I used to see them around a few years ago, but
I
haven't seen them.
They totally exist. Haven't had one in years, but they definitely make those down in Australia.
Okay, so we've been talking about like warm weather stuff. Do you prefer to drink wine on warm weather days in a park or rooftop?
Park.
Park. As an actress, do you prefer Jennifer Lawrence, Jennifer Connelly, or Jennifer Garner?
Ooh. I mean, I feel like Jennifer Lawrence has so much momentum right now. I don't know if she needs more, which is great. Like, nothing against her, because she's fabulous. But I love Jennifer Connelly. I feel like she's just so, like, deep and intellectual, and the work is so subtle.
And I guess this isn't really much of a quick fire, but do you have a female mentor? Is there someone who's been really influential to you?
You know, really, I mean, I have plenty of mentors, but I feel like the biggest ones have to be John Reagan, who's our wine director for the company, and also my current general manager, Kevin Richer.
Pretty hard not to.
I mean, there's my mom. My mom's pretty badass.
That's a good trio. John Reagan and Ken Richer. Pretty awesome trio there. and then I do want to end with just a geeky. I know you have all sorts of fun facts that you learn. Do you have any super like geeky like random fact that you might want to share that you've learned in your wine studies with our audience?
Oh, I mean, I have so many, but one of my favorite things to tell people is that, going back to our question of pairings and tannin, the reason that tannin dries out your mouth is because it literally metabolizes the proteins. It literally metabolizes protein. So if you have like a super big wine or a super tannic wine, you always want to be eating something with it, because if you eat like, if you have Nebbiolo and you have a whole bunch of like prosciutto or charcuterie or something, like you drink the Nebbiolo, you eat the charcuterie, it cleans out the oils from the charcuterie in your mouth. But if you just drink it by itself, it metabolizes the proteins in your mouth. And that's why you start like having this crazy chap thing in the center of your mouth.
That's a great geeky fact. Thank you so much, Mia. It has been such a pleasure to have you on the show. I need to get back to North End Grill soon. You've kind of re-inspired me to come back. I'm excited to see how you've grown the list recently.
Thank you. Come before the end of the month for Rosé.
Oh, yes. Guys, remember, go before the end of the month for Rosé. They're donating $1 per glass, $4 per bottle. And that, it, not only do you get to drink great Rosé, but your money also goes to a good cause. Thanks so much for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.